Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann again today. One of high-speed rail's biggest benefits is convenience, and a plan to connect Chicago and Columbus by rail would certainly be convenient for many in those cities. But would high-speed rail benefit some of the small towns along the proposed rail line? Our guest today certainly thinks so. David Berger is mayor of Lima. Mr. Berger, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
And joining us as well is Ken Prendergast. He's executive director of the All Aboard Ohio organization. Welcome to you as well, Ken.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Just to set the table a little bit for our listeners, this feasibility study we'll be talking about this hour, it's from the Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association. It looked at a proposed 300-mile rail system that they say would create more than 26,000 full-time jobs and $700 million in household income along the corridor. This is just a proposal. It still needs $1.3 billion in funding, so it's far from reality. That said, David Berger, mayor of Lima, how could a rail line like this help cities like yours?
Well, I've been a part of the discussion about passenger rail being reestablished in our community for over 20 years. And actually, as Governor Taft was authorizing the Ohio Hub Study, I worked with the mayors of Chicago, Fort Wayne, Pittsburgh, Columbus, and the five of us asked Governor Taft to include the route that would go from actually from Chicago through Columbus all the way to Pittsburgh. So this has been something that I believe has been long needed to connect our communities and ultimately to stimulate the economies along the entire route.
Ongoing conversations for 20 years, what's been the main stumbling block? Is it just funding?
Well, for many years, it was needing a national commitment to seeing this kind of passenger transportation system put in place, so that has been certainly partially solved with the Obama administration's commitment to high-speed rail that's rolling out nationally. What stimulated the recent study that the Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association folks put together was, frankly, the invitation of the Indiana governor at the time, who's now the president of Purdue, who wanted to see the business case for the route. And so they, here in actually in Fort Wayne, they took the lead on trying to assemble the resources for this study. And I think what they demonstrated was a very favorable opportunity connected with both passenger demand and also the costs that would be associated with making it a very competitive transportation system.
You are confident the benefits would outweigh the costs, that this would be a good thing for the city of Lima, for your region, and for Ohio and the other states?
Well, it's a very thick study, so I think you want to read the detail. But in fact, the bottom line is that it's a great opportunity. It would complement existing transportation systems. Really, these routes become enormously important as congestion continues at our airports and ongoing congestion on our highways continues to grow. So the opportunity for passenger rail really, I think, is a terrific one and really does provide because it's a daytime set of trains, it provides a huge opportunity for complementary development in the communities where these passenger stations will be developed.
A lot of people would say 20 years of talks, it would have been built by now if it was really that necessary.
Well, I guess a number of us take a longer point of view, and it has been, I think, in general, a shift away from passenger rail is beginning to be recognized as a mistake, and certainly in other parts of the country, as we've seen in the last several years, there's a growing demand for these systems to be developed, and we think it's also an opportunity for our communities along this route.
We're talking about the future of high-speed rail in Ohio. Listeners, join the conversation. Call 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. You can also email allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet the show at WOSU All Sides, or you can send us a note on Facebook. Ken Prendergast, Executive Director of All Aboard Ohio, let's bring you in. This particular case, this particular study from the Northeast, excuse me, I'm going to mess up the name here, the Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association. Talk about this study and what might set it apart from previous studies and what might make this project doable.
Sure. Well, what's making this doable is the people involved, and in addition to Mayor Berger, he was one of the early pioneers in this thing. But since then, there's been other interest by other folks along this travel corridor, which I believe is vastly underserved with transportation, both interstates, buses, and aviation. Even though we're talking about Lincoln, the third largest city in the Midwest, Columbus, with the what many believe is the economic capital of the Midwest, Chicago. One of those early leaders, though, was a group in Warsaw, Indiana, a little town, but they've got a huge orthopedics cluster there that needs transportation to Chicago. And they did their own independent study maybe 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, that showed that if they had a fast passenger rail link to Chicago, their constituents would save up to $45 million over a number of years from having fast passenger rail. And that's in Little Warsaw. Imagine what that would be in a city like Columbus, where you've got a number of different major industries and employers and economic sectors that would realize even more significant benefits than little old Warsaw. And so that's the kind of reasoning behind this kind of investment. I've been at this for 30 years, and it's been very frustrating to live in this void of passenger rail while all these states around you are making investments in passenger rail. And the only thing I can hope for is that eventually these states by surrounding us are going to want to be able to connect to each other and link us up and come through Ohio and bring us into the 21st century.
You and Dave Berger, you're painting a pretty rosy picture here. I'll ask you the same question I asked him. Why hasn't this been done yet? You're talking about all these economic benefits. Presumably, this would give any politician a lot of capital if they backed this project and it was successful. Why hasn't it been done yet?
Well, Ohio is a pretty skittish state, unfortunately, and it's something that's been the situation for a long time. Mark Twain once remarked that, if the world ended tomorrow, he'd move to Ohio because they wouldn't find out about it for 10 years. And so Ohio is often late to the party in a lot of things. But we believe that Ohio, because it's got 11 million people, it's got the same population density as France. We've got a number of cities in the state that deserve to have passenger rail, but don't. I mean, Columbus is the largest metro area in the United States without any form of passenger rail, whether it's light rail, Amtrak, or anything. We believe that eventually, the vacuum will be filled because it's just too hard to ignore.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, join the conversation, 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513. And Chris is calling from Columbus. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. My comment is just, instead of focusing on high-speed rail, why don't we just have a regular rail, passenger rail from Columbus? It just seems pretty ridiculous that we don't have anything going to Chicago, Detroit, or Cleveland already. But it seems like the rail is already there. I guess that's just about it.
It's my understanding there are a lot of right-of-way and liability issues, particularly with the major rail lines. Is that right, Ken?
Well, there are, but there's always a way to get around that. I mean, Michigan is finding a way to do it. Illinois is finding a way to do it. Pennsylvania, New York, and they're using existing right of way. They had the benefit of having something in place historically, albeit it was underutilized and slow. The trains average 50 miles an hour, but they saw the value in what was there and decided to invest in it and beef it up. And we've seen the ridership go up by double digits in both Illinois and Michigan and also over in Pennsylvania and New York. So the people have responded, and I agree that a lot of times you need to invest in something to get started, but you really follow where the politics lead you, and if the communities along this route want a fast passenger link, then we should do every effort to try and get that.
Chris, thanks for your call.
Part of the attraction of what's planned here is that it would in fact represent an investment in the basic rail routes that are in place, and as a result, in addition to providing the opportunity for passenger rail, it will improve the throughput on the freight rail systems as well. So I think that this ought to be understood from an economic development vantage point, that it's an infrastructure improvement that has benefits for the traveling public as well as for our industries and businesses along these routes. And I think to the caller's question, the fact is that Columbus is the biggest city in the country without any passenger rail. Mm-hmm. So this opportunity to connect to Chicago not only would finally correct that, but it would also not be duplicative of any existing highway route. I know that as other routes have been discussed in Ohio, there's often the comment, well, it's simply going to duplicate what we already have in our interstate system. There is no such convenience that would be duplicated with this. In fact, this would represent a huge new opportunity for connecting Columbus to Chicago and vice versa, and I think have an enormous benefit for the economies of all the communities along this route.
Again, we're talking about the future of high-speed rail in Ohio. We're talking with Ken Prendergast, Executive Director of All Aboard Ohio, as well as Dave Berger, the Mayor of Lima. Mr. Berger, I've been to Lima. I like Lima just fine, but it's often described as a Rust Belt city. Are you prepared to make this infrastructure investment? Is that really feasible?
Well, we've already invested in the passenger station. We bought the station along what was the former Pensy line years ago, and we renovated it into a customer center for our utilities department. And we did that both because we needed the facility for the utilities department, but also because we recognized that this location needed to be secured for passenger rail development eventually. So we've already begun to invest in those systems and believe that it has, again, an opportunity that is unlike what we had before. We used to have actually four trains coming through our community every day. We had the Capital Limited, which connected Chicago to Washington, and we had the Broadway Limited, which connected Chicago to New York. But those trains came through in the middle of the night. You had to be there at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock to catch those trains. This system that's anticipated with the Indiana study actually would represent trains that would start in the early morning and run throughout the day into the evening. And as a result, we have a different kind of catalytic effect for the economy in communities through which these rail systems would operate. Mm-hmm. And I think represent a new way of frankly relating to the businesses that are already in place.
We're talking about high-speed rail in Ohio. Listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513, 292-8513. We do have some callers on the line. Please hold the line. We're going to take a quick break, and right after that, we'll be joined with another voice, a skeptic of rail in Ohio. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Signs with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, and we'll be right back here on 89.7 NPR News.
Central Monday morning rail.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann again today. And this hour, we're talking about trains and a new proposal for high-speed rail between Chicago and Columbus. It's getting the support of plenty of Ohioans, but it will be a tough sell to Governor John Kasich. Here he is in his first press conference as governor-elect in 2010.
That train is dead. I said it during the campaign. It is dead. We are not going to have it.
The governor was talking about another rail proposal, the so-called 3C line that would have connected Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. Still with us on the line is Ken Prendergast. He's executive director of All Aboard Ohio. That's a pro-rail group. Joining us now in the studio to offer some insights as well as to why passenger rail might be a bad idea is Republican strategist Terry Casey. Terry, welcome back to the show.
Good. Glad I'm here.
A reoccurring point the governor has made is that who's going to pay for this? Is that your biggest concern?
Well, I love trains, toy trains as a kid. I've got a son, now grandchildren. Trains are fun. I've ridden 27 different trains in Europe, including some of the high-speed TGV, et cetera. So trains are wonderful. The question is, how do the economics, how do the laws of physics work? Because a lot of people don't realize so-called high-speed trains, you just can't put them on any tracks. The really good high speed, you need specially built tracks. So the curves, the grades, the sealed corridors, all those things are done correctly.
What about that they brought it up in the last segment? Columbus is the biggest metro area in the country without a rail system. I mean, how is that possible?
Well, Columbus seems to be doing just fine. I mean, there's nothing in the Constitution that says every large city must have rail service. There's nothing at all like that. And part of the problem, I mean, I looked through, I think it was 18 pages of this proposal. There's no real economics, no detailed costs outlined there. And sure, it'd be wonderful. I mean, we've taken a weekend trip up to Chicago for an OSU Northwestern game. It'd be nice to have a wonderful 110-mile-an-hour train that takes you right there. And boy, that'd really be wonderful and super. But the problem is, how do you make it work? And I studied a lot back in 2009 and 2010, the proposal that the Strickland people had, and it just didn't work well in the physics, how the timetables would work. And on this one, the state has actually not even studied it because no details have really been worked out on the economics. How do you pay for it? The capital, the rolling goods, the operating losses, who subsidizes those? A lot of questions. I'd love it, but we live in the real world.
Ken Prendergast, let's bring you in. What are your thoughts on what Mr. Casey just said?
Well, I think it's important to note that we're very early on in this process here. The report that was put out was a business case for this, showing the economic impacts and economic benefits and why we should do it. And I think that case was very clearly made out in this, including noting that that this thing would pay for itself in terms of its operating costs. The capital cost is another matter. And what we've seen in other states and other regions, including in Florida, where they did give back the money, but you've got a rail proposal down there that uses stationary developments to help finance the high speed rail service from Orlando down to Miami, and the cities have banded together in a lot of places where the states have not been supportive, such as in Minnesota or in Texas. And there's power of unity among these cities. The cities of the United States, there was a New York Times article that came out over the weekend that showed that these are the real innovators of the American economy. And with all the political gridlock at the state and federal levels, that's really where we need to look for leadership in this country, particularly when it comes to transportation and infrastructure issues. So I'm grateful for the leadership of folks like Mayor Berger and the other communities along the route, and those are the folks that are going to drive this thing.
Looking at the study, Terry Casey, 26,800 full-time jobs, $700 million in household income. Those are very Republican ideals.
Well, I can put down any numbers you want on a piece of paper, but go to the bank and see if they're going to loan you mega billions of dollars. And one of the realities, I mean, I've ridden transit systems all over the world. Example in COTA, which just recently, a few years back, doubled their tax, their ridership continues to slide downward. And basically, COTA, only 15% of their revenue, total revenue to operate it, is supported out of the fare box. And the difficulty, like on the 3C, where you had more, I think, population density and potential demand, Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, more than half of the operating costs would have had to been subsidized. And that's if the estimates were all correct. If you read the 2009 GAO, the Government Accounting Office, they looked at rail in America and around the world, and they really only had two problems. One is that people who want this traditionally always lowball, way underestimate the capital cost to build it and get it done, and that's what's happening in California. And then they overestimate demand so that what it takes out of the fare box to pay the operating costs don't meet the estimates. So estimates on paper are great, but go to the bank and try and borrow the money on that.
This is a minor point, but it was my understanding that coder ridership is up.
I think in the last 6 months I read where it was down. Maybe I'm confusing it with Cleveland, which dropped down. But either way, COTA, it's less than 15 cents, comes out of the fare box to cover the overall operation. Taxpayers pick up the difference.
That's a minor point. John calling from Columbus. John, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm a frequent business traveler between here and Chicago. In the order of about six times a month. And I cannot see this train as a viable alternative. It wouldn't be fast enough. The majority of people I see on the regional jets who are going to Chicago are business people. Easily 80% of them. They've got to be there. They've got to do their business. And in the same day, they've got to be back home. And again, with multiple stops and everything, the ideas proposed are just unviable. Secondly, you were talking about France and how they had an excellent rail system. I have to go over there again on business roughly three times a year. I'm familiar with the TGV because I have to use it to get where I'm going. But then again, that's a system that the French government launched in 81 and still isn't complete. Again, it requires a dedicated track bed, which still isn't built. And as a result of that, you have, delayed because you can't run the train at its maximum operating speed over normal rails. Add in one more thing. If you put it in something that is, the proper track bed between here and there, with a few stops along the way, you're going to create, in essence, what would be deemed a militarily, just like the National Highway System was put in for ultimate military use and defense of the nation. You're going to then introduce probably some sort of TSA scanning, which is only going to add, further time along getting on the train and getting off.
John, you talk about how it would not be that big of an improvement time-wise. It would be, right? I mean, when you go to the airport, you spend at least an hour before and an hour after and then an hour flight to Chicago. They say it would be about a four-hour train ride to Chicago. That's pretty comparable.
They say, but actually doing it would be quite another thing because when I talk about a similar... First off, France is 20% smaller than the size of the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. So put things in proportion. I mean, it's wildly different, but no. You go, say, a 500-mile trip, which would be Paris to Marseille. Okay. You're talking about easily a 5.5-hour trip, which, much of it is on the dedicated track. But when you start going over, say, to places like La Rochelle or whatever, which travelers who are going on vacation, whatever, would do, most of it is over normal track. And so you've got a super train operating at maybe the equivalent of 80 or 90 miles an hour at best. Okay. And then, who's going to pay for this?
Right. Well, John, thanks for the call. A lot of good points there. Ken Prendergast from All Aboard Ohio. Make the case to John. Why should John be excited about this this possibility of this train corridor?
Well, I think you started getting into it by comparing some of the travel times involved in flying to Chicago, and including the airport time. You need to allow at least an hour to get from the airports in Chicago and into central Chicago. which is where most of the corporate jobs are in Chicagoland, and where they're moving to. The airfares are typically higher than rail. The forecasted rail fares are two-thirds that of the airfare. We're seeing airlines getting out of these travel markets anyway. There was a really good report that came out last fall in September from the Office of the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Transportation. And they showed that that flying is in a tailspin in markets such as Chicago to Columbus. 3,000 flights have been cut since 2007. And most of those have been in markets of less than 500 miles. That's the sweet spot for a fast passenger train. So we've seen the number of flights and employments drop in Columbus by 9%, Cleveland by 31%, and Cincinnati's down 70%. Meanwhile, the airfares have gone up, and you know, this is an industry that has not made money since World War II as a whole. If you take all the years combined since World War II, this industry has lost money despite billions of taxpayer subsidies. So it's a bit of a double standard for people to say that, well, you know, every other mode is going to be subsidized, but, passenger trains have to make money. And in fact, Amtrak covers 88% of its costs from revenues. FAA covers only 71%. Federal highways cover less than half. I think it's time that we took a fair and even look at how we're subsidizing each of these modes and make the comparisons more fairly.
Talking about cost, Terry Casey, I was looking at the NoDOT website this morning, and the intersection I take every morning, 270 and 33 on the northwest side, they're paying $111 million to revamp that intersection. That's one of dozens in this metro area. And, I mean, doesn't that offset your cost argument a little bit?
Well, the thing, the little difference that rail people forget to mention is most all of the costs on whether it's ODOT, those kind of improvements come out of user fees,
gas
what
taxes.
People pay on gas taxes, license fees, other kind of things. And yes, there's some challenges that ODOT's got because people in some cases, because the economy might not be driving as much, they get more fuel-efficient vehicles. But it's really an apples and oranges comparison. And I look at California. They improved a big bond issue out there to do a high-speed San Francisco to L.A. And the costs have already, as I recall, roughly doubled. And they're now trying to build it in the middle of the one valley there, the Central Valley. It's going to be a short run kind of from nowhere to nowhere. It's totally uncertain if, when, and how. And then the federal government, in case anybody hadn't noticed it, we're now up to $17 trillion in federal debt on the way to $24 trillion. It's not like the federal government's got extra money because most all these plans count on a big chunk of federal money, maybe 80%, 70% to subsidize the capital costs. And if you don't have that, I mean, anybody can be a genius in business if you don't have to pay any rent and you don't have to have a mortgage payment on your equipment and your operations. Unfortunately, in the real world, it operates a little differently.
We're talking about high-speed rail in Ohio. We're talking about a new proposal from the Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association. Kevin from Bell Fountain. Kevin, calling. Good morning.
Good morning. I've ridden Amtrak several times. It is a great service. I have no clue why there's not service in Columbus. For those people that say that air travel is quicker, your times are totally flawed. I can show up at the station 30 minutes before the train takes off, check my luggage. And by the way, I don't have to pay for checked luggage. I can bring a carry-on bag. I can sit there in the comfort of my seat, which, by the way, are better than the airline seats, and work all the way to Chicago. I get the station in Chicago is in the heart of downtown where all the businesses are in Chicago. I don't have to waste a cab ride from O'Hare and Midway Airport into the heart of the city. The fares on Amtrak are very comparable. They're cheaper than air travel. Yep. I've actually went round trip from Columbus, Chicago for $54.
They can occasionally. I have seen plenty of train fares that are higher than air fares. Not usually the case, but either way, good points, Kevin. Ken Prendergast from All Aboard Ohio. What about Amtrak? Why have they not made their way into Ohio? Or into Columbus, rather.
Yeah. Well, Amtrak is a respondent agency. They typically, you know, follow on turnkey projects. They do not have a dedicated funding source, unlike the Federal Highway Trust Fund or the Federal Aviation Trust Fund. So they really have to go where the sponsors are, and typically those are the states. So those states that are willing to sponsor service are those that get the passenger service. And by the way, I want to note that the Federal Highway Trust Fund has been bailed out to the tune of $53 billion from the Federal Treasury since 2008. So the fact that this is a self-sustaining form of transportation is quite a fallacy here. You know, this is a mode of transportation that's growing. We're seeing that the driving is down since 2000. You know, we're trying to bail out the Ohio Highway Program by taking loans off the Ohio Turnpike. Amtrak is the fastest growing travel mode in the 21st century so far. It's grown 70%. And is now larger than all but four domestic airlines. And meanwhile, a million Ohioans are without cars, and that number's growing.
Terry Casey is shaking his head.
Well, when Amtrak, and there's no doubt in my mind that Amtrak, the population density, the interest in mass transit in the corridor from D.C. to New York to Boston is very significant. Personally, if President Obama had called me in 2009, I would have said, take the money you're going to put into rail, put it into the East Coast, and do it very well. But to be blunt, and it's not just Democrats, politics, they want to, the peanut butter theory, spread it around. Put some in Florida and put some in Illinois, put some in Ohio, put some in California. I think we'd have been a lot better off if we'd have focused in an area where there's more of an established pattern, where the population densities are a lot higher. And a couple different people have mentioned there's all the businesses in Chicago are all downtown. If you actually know people that work in the Chicago area, there's a lot downtown, but there's actually a lot more around the airport, the western suburbs, the northern suburbs. So people going to Chicago for business, depend upon what business you're going to, not everyone is going downtown. A lot of them are going in the general region of the airport.
But Ken makes the point that trains and passenger rail are growing around the country. Governor John Kasich has said he wants to make Ohio cool. Those are his words, not mine. This would go a long way, right?
Well, cool is great, but you got to be able to afford it. And for some strange reason, people that make rail tracks, make rail equipment, they actually want to be paid. The employees want to be paid. You've got to figure out some system that's self-sustaining. And again, I've mentioned France is great. And in fact, Paris to Avignon is 2 hours and 40 minutes on the high-speed train, up to 199 miles an hour. But that system has taken massive taxpayer subsidies in order to get where they're at now.
Severin calling from Reynoldsburg. I hope I got your name right, Severin.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling because this is an issue I've thought about quite a bit, and I would really like Kasich or whoever is the future governor to support this, because I think, well, a little bit of background, I used to live in Germany, so, and I used to ride the trains there, even between countries and stuff. And the Germans are obviously known for their autobahns, their highways. But I think that their rail system was really amazing, and I used to really love taking it. But I think if we were to do it here, I think that a lot of college students would really benefit from it, because first, there's the fact, I guess this kind of goes to the point to making Ohio cool. You know, there's a lot of people who on the weekends, you know, complain about not having things to do or wanting to get out of town, and they're not able to. And I think you're underestimating the number of people who would take advantage of this, especially if it didn't just go to between Chicago and Columbus, but also maybe reached Cincinnati and Cleveland. Now, admittedly, I don't know about all the costs, and I agree it should not be done if it were to be too expensive, but I think it's a good idea.
Well, Severin, thanks for your call. We do have a lot of callers lining up. I want to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We'll introduce another voice into this conversation. I'm Steve Brown, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News. You can also listen to WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back to All Signs with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in again for Ann today. In this hour, we're talking about the future of passenger rail in Ohio. The debate has raged on all levels of government this year, especially as a key part of the federal budget. Over the past few months, Amtrak, one of the biggest railroad companies in the U.S., has been the subject of intense debate over its funding, with a clear divide between the U.S. House and Senate on how much to appropriate. Still with us is Ken Prendergast, Executive Director of All Aboard Ohio, as well as Terry Casey, a Republican strategist. Joining us on the phone now is Ross Capon, President and CEO of the National Association of Railroad Passengers. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So put this regional fight in Ohio into context, if you can. Is this playing out around the nation, this type of political battle?
To a large extent, yeah. I mean, the public wants trains. We see efforts to get them in a lot of places. We see some states like Illinois and Virginia that have just added service to Norfolk, which has been wildly successful. Illinois is getting ready to start a service from Chicago to the Quad Cities, a weekend service between Boston and Cape Cod, the first in 40 years or so, is going like gangbusters. So one of our favorite lines, and Secretary LaHood is fond of saying that the public is ahead of the politicians because the political process, I mean, right now we're having debate on the House and Senate floors about whether to castrate or shut down Amtrak in various ways. So that kind of illustrates the gap between what the public wants, the fact that ridership on Amtrak is set records in 9 of the last 10 years, and what's going on in Washington.
Does Amtrak make money? How is Amtrak financially? You talk about it growing, but it's making money?
Well, no form of transportation is making money. So the answer is no, they are not making money. But let me refer back to the so-called massive taxpayer subsidies in France. There is a conscious effort by Europe to get people to use energy-efficient transportation, which also is cost-effective in many other ways and environmentally futuristic and sound in many ways. And a blinders-on look at whether the train is profitable in the sense of would a private sector company build it misses the point.
A lot of the rails you're referencing are in heavily populated areas in France and on the East Coast. Does passenger rail work when it goes from Lima, Ohio, to Warsaw, Indiana?
Well, I think that's the wrong question. Does an interstate highway work on the same segment? We're talking about major metropolitan areas. I think it's probably already been said that Columbus, Ohio, is the largest metropolitan area in the country. Mm-hmm. It does not have passenger train service. And the distances between Cleveland and Columbus and Cincinnati and Columbus and over to Fort Wayne and Chicago, these are doable by trains.
We're talking about high-speed rail, passenger rail in Ohio. Listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, 292-8513. Terry Casey, Ross Capon making a strong case.
Well, anything is doable. The question is it economically feasible? When I looked, particularly in 2009 and 2010, at some of the high-speed rail, and again, there's people will say some existing rail lines you can run maybe 90 miles an hour, but if you're only averaging 40 or 50 miles an hour, it's not very high speed. But a lot of these tracks cost $80 to $100 million a mile to build if you're going to do it and do it right. So people want things and they'd love it, but the question is, what's it cost in operating costs, subsidies, the capital cost to build it at $80 to $100 million a mile and buy all the equipment? And unfortunately, when you look at the details, the numbers don't add up very well.
I think this study from the Northeast Indiana Passenger Rail Association estimated up to $4 million per mile. So a big difference between 80 and 90.
Well, but that's not true high speed. See, most people, if you ask them a question, would you like to have, would you wish for high-speed rail, they'd say, gosh, that would be great. I could get up to Cleveland really fast. But then you tell them, well, we're going to run on old freight lines when the freight companies will let us run the trains and the service might not be good and it's really not going to be that fast, maybe 50 miles an hour. People say, why do I want to bother with that? Let's have the real thing. But the real thing costs a lot more when you add in all the costs.
Ken Prendergast, I can't say your name, Ken Prendergast. Let's bring you back in. What about that? What about this idea that it wouldn't really be a high-speed train and that people really only want high-speed trains?
Well, I think the important thing to note here is the route that's proposed to be used. Much of it is the old Pennsylvania Railroad line that ultimately went between Chicago and the East Coast. And as recently as the 1940s, the Pennsylvania Railroad was doing over 100 miles an hour with 1940s-era technology on this corridor. It was beautifully engineered, gentle curves, straight as an arrow in other spots. It's a very well-engineered line. It needs modernization. It needs new signal systems and all that to bring it up to modern safety standards. But the fact is that the corridor is already a prime corridor for this kind of thing, and that's why this is $4 million a mile, not the $80 to $90 million that he's quoting. And the folks that did this study didn't just pull these numbers out of the air. They looked at what other things are costing because we've got real-world experience from other states on what they're doing, what the benefits are, what the costs are. And they applied it to this corridor, which, like I say, is already well engineered for this kind of service.
Joe is calling from Columbus. Good morning, Joe.
My main comment is I think in order for Ohio to sustain its population, that we need to invest in Ohio. We've lost two House seats. Every year, 30,000 to 40,000 people leave Ohio for other states. I think Ohio has to be competitive with other states. And at this point, cutting budgets and continuing to cut and cut and cut is not the way to do it.
Terry Casey, bold ideas is what Ohio needs.
Well, there's bold ideas, but you want to be smart when you pick bold ideas because just any idea you dream up is not necessarily the best. I mean, when it comes time to buy a car, last time I bought a car, it's been a few years back, I got 188,000 miles on it, but, you know, I'd like to have had leather seats and I'd like to have had a sunroof, but that cost a good bit more.
But that's not an infrastructure investment.
Well, or you look at a home. I mean, there's lots of features you'd like to have in a home, lots more room. You got to look at what can you afford and what works and where's the smartest way to spend the money. So I'd love to have seen all the details, but again, the term high speed is thrown around. Then you look in the fine print, well, it's up to 110 miles an hour, but what's the real effective average? And one of the problems on the 3C proposal from Cleveland to Cincinnati, it would have taken about 7 hours to get there. And people just didn't, and in fact, it didn't even take you to downtown Cincinnati. That was the 3C proposal.
The seven hours referred to if no improvements to the track were made. That's a chivalry.
Correct. Right.
Listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're talking about high-speed and or passenger rail in Ohio. Bill is calling from Toledo. Bill, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. I think what's missing here, for one, is the Republican strategist totally misses the boat on vision. It's really unfortunate. But my main concern is, you know, the disabled, the mobility challenge. Ohio's budget only spends under 1% on public transportation, and it is an inequality that is just stark in Ohio. The lack of vision, the inability to recognize the future development opportunities up and down existing rail infrastructure. Our strategist really loves to hammer on the cost of all these things, but what's the human cost? What is the human cost of the disabled and the senior population and the growing baby boom that is going to demand more and better transportation choice? I mean, I love his, you know, discussion about costs and all these things. America is a great place. We build big things. We do fantastic things when the politicians get out of the way. And what's unfortunate is we have a growing need, and it's being unaddressed in the state of Ohio. And people like Ken Prendergast and All Aboard Ohio and the work that the National Railroad Association is doing in Washington is a yeoman's work. It is work that is necessary, it's timely, and as soon as Ohio gets on board, we're going to start seeing economic prosperity, which seems to be a buzzword in Republican circles. We're going to have transit-oriented development up and down this state. It doesn't matter if it's high speed, low speed, any speed. It goes zero right now. It goes 0 miles an hour now, and people are trapped in these smaller cities between, you know, Michigan and Ohio State. I mean, we're talking about our friend from Indiana trying to bring rail to Ohio. I mean, there's absolutely zero vision in Columbus for more and better passenger rail, and it's really unfortunate. But there is such opportunity connecting colleges and universities to provide educational opportunities and access for the disabled.
Bill, I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to give Terry Casey a chance to respond to your comments.
Well, the Ohio taxpayers had a chance to vote. I think it was maybe 15, 18 years ago. There was a proposal for a one-penny sales tax. It went to the people of Ohio, and they voted it down. Not 55-45, it went down 80% against and only 20% for. And on spending, I mean, in Cuyahoga County, their county, the taxpayers do a full penny on every purchase you buy goes just to transit in that county. It's a half cent of every purchase in Franklin County. So when you add it all up, there's a lot of public money that goes into transit in Ohio. I'm not sure that the 1% is exactly right, because there's different ways that those in need are helped by a state budget.
With the gas prices we've seen in recent years, do you expect that vote would be the same today?
Well, if it's 70-30, it still loses. But the key thing is they're welcome to put something before the public to vote on. But if you're going to vote on it, the public wants to know, what's it going to cost me? What am I going to get? Because that was one of the big disappointing things on the 3C plan. The last train would have left Cleveland at about 3 o'clock. That doesn't do you much good if you go up there for the Indians game at night. Or if a Browns game would run to 4 o'clock, you can't make the train back at 3 o'clock.
What about Bill's comments about the human cost, about improving the quality of life?
Well, everybody needs a better quality of life. The problem is, how do you pay for it? And you just can't do everything that everybody would want. So I'm all for cool. I'm all for exciting. As I said, I've ridden trains all over Europe, and they're absolutely wonderful. Particularly the experience if you're in the dining car and it's a long 5-hour trip. It's a wonderful experience. But even in Europe, the good dining cars don't exist as much because economics played into it.
Ken Prendergast from All Aboard Ohio, running out of time here. Make your final case. What's the closing argument here? What's the sell to the people of Ohio you want to make?
Well, the fact is that people are driving less. People are taking transit more. Transit ridership is now higher in the United States than at any time since the highway bill was passed in '56. We spend in Ohio 4 times as much on cutting the grass along interstates than we do on public transportation in the state. So let's be realistic as to the scale of the investment. The fact is, we spend a little too much time devoting toward the cost of things and not balancing that with the value and the payback that we get. And that's happened under both Democratic and Republican administrations in this state for 40 years. And our lack of population and economic growth is clear evidence of that. We need to catch up not only to our competitors in other states, but also to the rest of the world. I mean, Turkey is spending money to build a 186-mile-an-hour train. If they can do it, why can't Ohio, which is one of the largest and most prosperous economies in the world? But how long we stay that way is up to us.
Ross Capon, about 30 seconds, a final comment from you.
Yeah, it's important to remember that the Amtrak ridership is going up on all trains of all speeds. The New York-Boston is not exactly high speed by any definition in terms of running time, but there's a sizable business market there. And I think the most important thing is the new generation has a different attitude towards transportation. Younger people want to be connected. They don't want to be driving. And that is reflected in survey after survey, including those by the automobile companies, much to their concern.
Well, we're certainly not going to settle the issue today, but I want to thank all of our guests, Terry Casey, a Republican strategist. Ross Capon is president and CEO of the National Association of Railroad Passengers. Ken Prendergast is the executive director of All Aboard Ohio. And earlier in the show, we spoke with David Berger, the mayor of Lima. That will do it for this hour of All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, and you're listening here on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.